Okay, before we go to our final panel on authoritative data and AI, or AI and authoritative data, I want to introduce two people very important to our program today. One, I want to thank Maggie Colley, who is, of course, the executive director of OpenStreetMap US, and she's going to be moderating the panel, and I really appreciate her, all her help and the support that the OSM US group does for this organization. And if you are not familiar with OpenStreetMap, there are a number of there's at least a couple of different panels in the, or presentations in the Foster G program the next couple of days. Maggie mentioned the Trails initiative that's just starting out. This is a huge deal. Collaboration between the federal government and OpenStreetMap for volunteers for geospatial information, it's almost like unbelievable to me after years and years. The other thing, I also wanted to introduce Dr. Carter Christopher. Carter is on the panel, but he organized this, and I really appreciate his help. Carter is, of course, at ORNL, where he's the section head for human dynamics in the National Laboratory's Geospatial Science and Human Security Division. Many of you knew Carter when he worked at NGA. Some of you knew Carter when he worked for the State Department and under the Geographer of the United States, but I really appreciate his help in organizing this panel. Carter, thank you. So, Maggie, take it away.
Yeah, here's our effort.
Thank you, Eddie. Welcome back. We are the last panel of the day, so hang in there. we've heard a lot about what a lot of the panels already touched on what we're going to dive into a little bit more deeply now, talking about, you know, that magic word authoritativeness, especially now in the age of Aquarius, of AI, and VGI. Sorry, it's late. I have to make some jokes to keep you engaged. So thank you, Eddie, for already introducing me and Carter, but I'll pass it down and have Mike and Will introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Will Mortensen. I'm the Deputy Director for the Office of Geography at NGA. Been in that job for roughly 7 months. Prior to that, I was over at CBP for a year. And then before that, I was the VGI lead for NGA for about 8 years. I stood up a program called NOME, which some folks have talked about today. So I will hand it to Mike.
Afternoon. I'm the director of the National Geospatial Program at the U.S. Geological Survey. We're the lead domestic agency for topographic mapping in the United States. We've got active programs in national LIDAR acquisition, production of surface water mapping, the national hydrography data sets, and then the operational production of topographic maps. We have a dynamic mapping system. You can come in and check out TopoBuilder. You can make your own map. It takes about 8 to 10 minutes at best. And then we also have the stage maps that we've been producing for, 150 years or so.
Great. Well, welcome. We have 3 or 4 questions for the panelists that they'll talk through, but we want to make sure that we leave time at the end for y'all's questions. So think about what you want to ask us already, and don't be shy. So we're going to start down there at the end with Will, and we're going to just ask that main question. I don't know if Ron's still here, but thank you for defining authoritativeness for us earlier. But I'm going to ask each of these panelists, how does your agency or where you serve define or view authoritativeness for data?
So that's a good question. I was sort of joking with Maggie before we walked up here. When a tough question comes out, you know, when they ask a question, you ask a question back. So what do you define as authoritative data? So, and I say that sort of tongue in cheek, in the fact that what I believe is authoritative may not necessarily be what Eddie believes is authoritative. The real key is, does it meet my mission need? And can I utilize that data to accomplish an objective? We do produce authoritative data within our organization. And by authoritative, I would say our folks are analyzing data that we receive from different avenues and different venues. So we feel confident in the data that we're choosing, but I've seen authoritative be wrong, right? Authoritative data be incorrect. And so I think it sort of goes back to the conversations we had about fit for use and sort of, you know, what's going to meet your mission needs. So by authoritative, I mean, that's the best definition I can give you from the Will Mortensen perspective. I do know that we strive our best to produce the most authoritative data, but I'd say the key to that is having as much sources as possible. So I'm not just going to utilize OpenStreetMap, for example. I may use OpenStreetMap with 7 or 8 different sources to give me that more complex and authoritative response to a question.
I think it's a really interesting question. If you backed up not that long ago, I think authoritative and official probably has similar definitions. I anticipated you might ask this question, and I referred to a really good source. The UN has a group called the Council of Experts on Global Geospatial Information Management. They have a subcommittee on legal and policy frameworks. If you can suffer through all that bureaucratic naming, there is a really important document they presented this August at the most recent UN GGIM meeting, where they discuss just this very thing. What does authoritative mean, and in light of fit-for-purpose data or official data? And they had a couple of definitions that they drew from other sources in the geospatial community around the globe. The UK Geospatial Commission adopts a definition that is very similar to official. It's an official government agency, and that's something that you see replicated in your geographics definitions, and even some ones that we probably use in the FGDC or other communities, where it's an agency that has the official designated authority or the legal authority. Authoritative data, legal authority, that kind of makes sense. There's some other definitions that look into an organization that has the mandate or the ability to maintain and serve that data so that it's not just dumped out there without any sustainable plan. I think there's also some elements in the definitions of your geographics that the data is available to be in the public domain. It's not just authoritative and really good quality, but it's something that's out there for public use and that can be reused. So I think it's a lot of these definitions. I think over the past couple of years, we've seen some more acceptance of data that doesn't have to come from an official designated government body be identified as authoritative, and that there's more separation between official versus authoritative. But I think that definition is still evolving.
So at Oak Ridge, we're a Oak Ridge National Lab is a federally funded research and development organization. What that means is we are an element that can operate on behalf of the federal government and help the government solve hard problems. So we are consumers of authoritative data, and we deliver things to the government that is then turned around as authoritative data sources. And so for us, what we consider to be authoritative is wholly rooted in fitness for use and trustworthiness. And we look at where can we find the best data available to support our science mission so that we can make the best science outcome, science data set that can then be used by the Department of Energy, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, or whomever our sponsor is to support their community, to support their customers. So when we think about trustworthiness, we think about reliability of the data, currency of the data, being able to quantify the uncertainty, because all data has errors and all data has as soon as data is created, it's immediately out of date. And the world is constantly changing underneath of us. The things that are represented in the data may be static or stable for a certain period of time, but we want to understand the dynamism of the world that we're operating in so that we can quantify the uncertainty of the data that we're using and ultimately make as precise as possible science data sets that can be used by the government to answer questions. So when we think about authoritativeness of data, it's not just the source that it's coming from, but it's the trustworthiness of the source. Aaron Myers, who's on the Oak Ridge team earlier today, talked about the Eagle Eye platform, and we source our outage data for Eagle Eye from the authoritative sources, which isn't the government, it's the utilities that report on the outages. But those utilities report their outages in a plethora of different ways. Some of them have web pages that are updated all the time. Some of them tweet that out, or you know, whatever it's called now on X. And some of them don't report it in the same timely fashion as others. And so we have to accommodate all of that in the ways that we aggregate and harmonize that data. So figuring out the right sources, but also the right ways to handle the data, all flows into the authoritative equation.
Thanks. Anybody have another comment on the authoritativeness theme before we move on? Great. So thanks. Those are lots of characteristics come to mind for authoritative, but it seems like we still don't necessarily have a clear definition. Keep working on that. I'm going to start with you, Mike, next. I'm thinking about the responsibility, so not just the definition, but the responsibility involved in all data. National AppCore is generating volunteer geographic information for the U.S. government, and provides that data to the public. Is there any communication, and what is the responsibility of government to provide the communication around those data sources and how it might be different from your other data sources?
So I think it is a really imperative if we, and our program is one where we aggregate data from a variety of different sources. If we include citizen science data or sources that we wouldn't traditionally use as or see as authoritative and want to bring them into our data stack to produce on our maps or deliver out to the public, I think it is imperative that we communicate not only the source from where we got the data, but what the error budget is, all the metadata about it, how reliable is it, if we're going to be stamping USGS on it. And the National Map Corps is one that we've been using for a number of years. For those that may not be familiar, there's a few thousand volunteers that we work with, and they augment our structures database, both the geometry and the attribution. It's a point data set, but we allow the users to come in and move the point, so it's over the center point of a building. And they also can update a lot of the attribution so that the spelling is correct. Maybe you don't have any extraneous upper lowercase, that it's maybe if the spelling's changed or renamed, it's updated. So these are all the things the National Map Corps has done. And I think we're still one of the very few, if the only, federal agencies that have a way to incorporate citizen science and VGI data into an authoritative product or an official product, depending on how you want to use definition. But your question about how do we communicate this, I looked into this a little bit in my own program, because I wasn't quite so sure, and we do, and it's in metadata, which means that people probably aren't aware. So I think there's some room for improvement there and how we communicate that people should be. I want to do a better job and with not just National Map Corps data, but if we are going to be relaxing our definitions or looking to aggregate beyond our traditional definitions, what's a good mechanism to do that? Sure, we can track it in the metadata and incorporate the provenance so people are aware, but do we have a higher responsibility to maybe highlight that or bring that up a level, or maybe it's changing the symbology in the data to make it more aware that this was not necessarily the traditional source. It still goes through validation, and in fact, it meets all of our specifications for National Map Accuracy Standards, so it's not that it's poor data. In fact, it turns out it's very high-quality data, but I do think we have not only a responsibility, and in some cases, we're not maybe not meeting that responsibility, and how we communicate that, because I do think it is important.
I'll pass it to Carter after this. I know you use a lot of, AI-generated data within your models, and is there any communication there within your products?
So we definitely communicate data sources that go into our models. I think the most challenging thing when you start to think about, and the reason that I organize this panel here for this community, right, is most of the AI work that's being done now is being built on top of open source. Even the commercial AI platforms, it's all open source under the hood, right? And the missing piece, though, is that we can talk about the model all day long, but these models don't do anything without training data. And we don't have a really good way of communicating the sources and provenance of the training data, which isn't just, a source that you point to, hey, I'm using Maxar imagery or Planet imagery, but it's tens of thousands of labels that go into these models, and how we have cataloged, document and report that out is a problem that we haven't solved, that we haven't solved as a national lab and the community hasn't solved. And when we start to get to that concept of trustworthiness, I'm pointing at my paper because I've got it written down here. I'm reminding myself trustworthiness. And if you read the AI literature, you kind of read the industry rags, right? There's a lot of conversations around the trustworthiness of AI, especially in the hallucinations of ChatGPT, right? And the same thing can convey over to the computer vision world. But we have to have a way of documenting and understanding the provenance of the sources, of the labeled data that are coming into our models, so that we can get to explainability, we can get to trustworthiness, and we can certainly understand the fitness for use of the AI outputs, and ultimately, hopefully, get to some level of authoritativeness and trustworthiness for those sources. And we think, and we're very trusting of our own data, but we want the community to be as well.
So I would just add on to Carter's point, is that one of the things, and I've only been in the seat I'm in for a very short period of time, but the training data is a big aspect of any AI ML activities. And I've I've constantly argued for some kind of training database of data, authoritative data, whether that be made through NGA or through other organizations, that you have a trustworthy set of data that can go out and help train these algorithms. Because as Carter referenced, it is time consuming, it is expensive, but I think the return on investment for the community would be a huge win for everyone. So that's one of the things I'd like to see. Whether or not we get there anytime soon is hard to say. And then I had a train of thought, and then now it's just gone, but I'm sure it'll come back to me in a second. No.
Great. I mean, I think about licenses, actually, when you say that, because I think about, you know, OpenStreetMap is used often as label data.
It wasn't the license thing, but one of the things I do think would be nice is a sort of a government-public partnership, in that, you know, if the government's using open source of some type, is if you're seeing errors, being able to report that back to the open source community, because I don't think that happens very much, if at all, but I do think it would be hugely beneficial if you're seeing stuff within the open source data sets that, hey, by the way, folks, this is what we're noticing, and it might help you guys make better data as well, so...
Plus one to that. I mean, I know contributions to open source are always welcome, and I think that's one of the hardest things that we face as a community is bringing in more contributors. I mean, users are great, but contributions can be even better. So plus one to that. So we're cruising through these questions, but we're going to have more time for audience.
That can take up a few seconds.
Okay.
it's a good point you had about a database of training data sets. We've talked a little bit about the authoritative data providers, or at least those ones that are part of the federal government portfolio, the National Spatial Data Infrastructure, and the ones that maintain a lot of the data sets, about we're really good at producing nationally comprehensive, consistent data sets, whether it's elevation or addresses or hydrography or all sorts of different things. You can look at the A16 portfolio and see that. We produce that out for a variety of products. There's nothing to say we couldn't create training data sets from those same elements, so that we have an elevation training data set of LIDAR point clouds or elevation models or of surface water and hydrography that's very well described, that's very well maintained. That might be something as FGDC is going about their future NSDI strategy, and we talk to the portfolio managers and theme leads, that we think about is an opportunity for us to do that and contribute to the world, or at least to the nation and their efforts in the federal geospatial community and this developing AI policy. I think that's something that would be really valuable. You're not the first one to mention that that's something that's needed, is really reliable, well-made, well-curated, and documented training data. So I hope that's something we do get to sooner than rather than later.
Yeah, so back in April, May, maybe it was before then, right? We have every other year at Oak Ridge National Lab, we have a workshop called the Trillion Pixel Challenge Workshop. And this year, of course, with ChatGPT and OpenAI's kind of outputs this past year, large language models were a big topic of conversation. But just in general, generative AI was a big focus. And the fact that there isn't an authoritative foundational model that is not proprietary, that is not black box, that the community can build on top of was something that was of big interest to the community of 100 researchers and government folks that were there. Right now, OpenAI, Google, Amazon, those that are building the large language models, Facebook, they're all building it off the internet backbone, and Lord knows it's a trustworthy source, right? So you know, there's a real concern about balancing that, and not just from the perspective of ensuring equity among the views that are represented within the training data that goes to make that model, but ensuring that, you know, back to that word trustworthiness, that's a component of the training data. And so maybe that's a new role for the government, to sponsor these foundational models, which you can then build bespoke mission-specific models on top of that can support different use cases that the different domains that would use it would use it for. So
Keep turning it off. All right. Any other comments to, related to that? Great. Seeing some themes here, and also we're getting towards that last question I'm going to ask, but thinking about, you know, authoritativeness, does there have to be a certain dollar amount paid for a data set or tied to data to make it more authoritative? Is that also a challenge?
You mean if it costs a lot of money, it must be good?
Yeah.
There's definitely, if you're willing to pay for it, you know, it must be good. But I don't know. From our perspective, we always start in the open. We believe that the best data is probably already out there. And so before we ever spend our cycles in building something new, we're going to canvas the community. And understand what is out there and what is of high value that we can utilize, and then build on top of or fill in the gaps. And an example is one of the kind of the most well-known things that Oak Ridge National Lab produces for the community is the LandScan population data sets. And if you haven't ever seen it, go to landscan.ornl.gov, and all of our population data sets, most of our population data sets have been open sourced there for you guys to utilize, as well as all the methodologies behind creating them. But a big component of building those models is building data, the built environment, infrastructure, because people, for 80% of our day, we're inside of a building, most of us, if we're not, out doing construction work. So we, in our models, we put people into buildings. And, if you've paid attention to the geospatial news lately, Microsoft is releasing open buildings, and Google is releasing open buildings, and this lady over here is producing a lot of open buildings. And so we don't want to go and create buildings for the sake of creating buildings. We want to create buildings where the community is missing that data. Ultimately, right, leverage what's available to build our population models and have accurate results. And so, we build tools inside of Oak Ridge that go and compare Microsoft to Google to OpenStreetMap to some other source that may be out there, and help us understand and quantify the quality of those different sources, and then identify the gaps. And ultimately, then we can bring our own tooling to bear, AI tools to bear to fill in those gaps. But again, leverage the work of the open community before we spend a dime on trying to build it.
Expensive data doesn't necessarily mean it's better. I mean, so we spend a lot of money on data in my organization. And to Carter's point, his data must be super, super awesome, because it's not cheap. Just saying. Let's get a break, my man. Now, I've seen really good open source data, and I've seen really terrible data we've bought, right? And the key is that in my organization, I think Amanda pointed it out earlier, was it's a culture shift in my organization. We've grown accustomed to paying money to buy specific types of data with specific attributes, meets specific thresholds, and will pass all kinds of security checks and all kinds of checks on metadata. But if you open that data up on an image, it might be missing a road, right? Because nothing is necessarily 100% perfect. And so what's that risk you're willing to accept, right? If I have an entire country of data that I have to review in 5 days, well, that's not realistic, right? So you have to do sampling, right? Which you're naturally not going to be able to review everything. And so I think it's a interesting question, but it's not, it's certainly not the answer. Is more cost doesn't necessarily mean equal better. So
yeah, I would agree. It's just because it's expensive doesn't mean it's good. Just because it's expensive or it has any cost doesn't mean it's necessarily authoritative either. I think where you might see the sweet spot, I'd like to think, all being gov, that the sweet spot is where we have, the government has invested to produce authoritative data. NAEP is a good example. That costs money, right? There's a number of agencies that give money to USDA to fly the country with imagery. every year. Every couple years, the whole country is refreshed. That's an investment that Congress thought was worth the bang for the buck. 3D elevation program and LIDAR is the same thing. It's a very expensive program, but the value's there. There's a return on investment to that. It's authoritative data. It does cost money, but it does seem that it's worth the investment, and Congress saw that by giving us and our partners the ability to do that. We've run into trouble in other places where we weren't able to purchase data, even if it might have fit the definition of authoritative or it was high quality, because it just wasn't a sustainable cost model for us. At the other end of the spectrum, we've got citizen science data that costs us very little to use, but it turns out to be very high quality and very useful.
Thanks for taking the curveball question. So going back to your processes, I think, Carl, the next question to you, it sounds like Oak Ridge kind of has certain processes and vetting models in place to take all these different data sets and kind of, you know, make the cream come to the top. So can you talk a little bit more about your processes for, you know, reviewing the data that you use, whether it's coming from AI or VGI or any other source?
I don't know that we've got a singular process. I've got several folks out there in the crowd, Jessica, Aaron, Jason, that spend a lot of their days trying to make sense of what data can we trust that's out there and where do we need to then fill in the gaps. So they're probably the better ones to tell you about the processes. And so go see Jessica and Jason and Aaron. I'll guess, just pass the buck there. But I'll, given where we are on time, I was thinking as I was sitting down and Eddie was up this earlier today talking, it was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that Eddie and I and Nate Franz, who was just on the panel, wrote the future of Foundation GEOINT as part of USGIF's state and future of GEOINT compendium that they put together in it was the 2019 edition, but it came out in January 2019. And so at the time, the three kind of pillars of that were leveraging the cloud, AI, and VGI, crowdsourced data, right? And so this is not a new concept, but I think all of these components are maturing to be parts of the conversation, like inevitable and always there parts of the conversation. It's not a stretch now to think that we're going to have volunteered geographic information as part of the NGA I was with NGA at the time, the NGA authoritative data baseline or the USGS authoritative data baseline. And volunteered geographic information doesn't have to mean it's coming from the public that is digitizing data in OpenStreetMap. It could be coming from your partners, because Lord knows, right, the army on the ground. I remember Nathan wrote as part of this paper that we wrote that, the data that's collected in the field is of the highest quality, it's of the highest resolution, and we at the time, and I still, today, we're probably not even the best at it, but we at the time lacked the ability to bring that great data from the edge back into the mothership, as we would call it, and integrate that in with the foundational data. And so now that machine learning is maturing and we've got constant, the ability to, not that we're always doing it, but we've got the ability to constantly crank out data. We need new processes and we need new capabilities and we need the help of the community to understand how we can kind of bring all these things together to kind of tie it all in a bow, because these components are now understood to be parts of the solution. It's just a process of getting them all together that we've got to work through. So,
I think there might be two questions in there for how do we validate or what kind of practices might we want to employ for AI generated data, and what do we use for VGI data? I think those two might require different solutions. At least for the National Map Corps, we've got some self-policing. We experienced users that have reached a threshold of contributions. They're able to, and we allow them to edit and review some of the newer users or those that don't have as much experience. And then there is a government review that's in there as well. So there's a tiered system customer review that makes that data high quality. With the AI data, that's a, I think, a different ball of wax in how we develop a process. Whether it's, if it's a generative AI in the front of a web page, it says, it asks a question, what's the temperature of the water in the lower Colorado River right now, and searches USGS holdings. How do we validate that versus something that might be a pattern recognition or something working on imagery to create a vector product that might require a different path. Just one anecdote of an article that I read, maybe some of you did too. A lawyer got in a lot of trouble for using ChatGPT to help write one of his arguments in a court of law, and it sounds great, saved us some time. The issue was the AI generated cases that never existed. And the judge called him on it, and somehow that AI was able to make up stuff. And it wasn't based in some evidence or fact that he had scooped. So that's something we would need to validate. If we're going to be asking AI systems in the future to generate data, generate geospatial data, it's going to be synthetic, but it should have a basis. If it's interpolation or extrapolation, that might be acceptable within some threshold, but it shouldn't be creating something that really is off base. And that's an excellent question. I don't think we have the answers yet for how we validate that, especially if we're going to be putting our government stamps on it to make it a product that we deliver to the public.
So for us, we do multi-tiered approach to data validation and checks. So we have automation that looks through the data and looks through attribution of the data and makes sure it meets all these key thresholds. And then we do visual inspections. As I said before, the world's a pretty big place. So naturally, we can't look at every single piece of pixel on the ground. But that's why we're investing and we're building more visual inspection tools, things that will help kind of key our analysts into problem areas or areas of higher complexity where we anticipate there would be more issues with the data we've received from folks.
Awesome. For my last question, it's kind of a call out to this community and thinking about what do we need to enable or even articulate as an open geo community to kind of accelerate this shift and interpretation of authoritative, given all of the new data sources out there. And you know, maybe pick one or two things you think that we could potentially do over the next 6 to 12 months. No, just kidding. Hopefully when we celebrate the 15th Fed Geo Day, we're going to be talking about this very differently. So who wants to start with that one?
Sure.
All right, I'll start. So I think that there's two areas where I think that we have some research horizons that are going to be fun to tackle. That'll be fun to collaborate with all of you in here on. We're really good at, you know, from a geospatial perspective, this is a geospatial community, right? So we're really good at creating things that come out of satellite imagery, derivatives of satellite imagery. We at Oak Ridge, and you know, probably many of you, can create building footprints or roads or some other feature, land cover feature, coming out of satellite imagery really fast, really easy. You know, or if you can build a model and hopefully do that at large areas. But what comes out of that is generally a one-dimensional data set. It's a you know, if you take that raster output of your computer vision model and you turn it into a polygon, now you've got a polygon, but it's just an empty data set. We need to put meaning behind these polygons and characterize them so that those downstream users can use them to make sense of the world. So one research horizon is the attribution, the characterization of the features that we see in satellite imagery that the humans naturally can do, right? As a little piece of prep, I didn't really have a chance to talk much about it, but I looked up NGA's GeoInt Content Extraction Standard, which is the guide that NGA puts out for all of their contractors to extract features that would go in their maps. It's 400 pages long, and it describes all the different attributes and all the different attribute fields that you would use if you're characterizing the world so that you can make a cartographic product that the Army or Navy or Air Force could use. So we've got to help the machines get to that level of smart. And I don't know that they'll ever be as smart as a human when it comes to map interpretation, maybe. But we've got to help the machines be able to characterize what it sees within the satellite imagery in more than a one-dimensional fashion. The second piece is, you know, the industry that's out there is getting better and better at producing data from the volumes of satellite imagery that are being collected every day. And all of that data is flowing into Mike and Will, and they need to be able to know how good it is. And so we need to figure out the right ways to use artificial intelligence to support the quality control process, and quality assurance process, so that they can know and measure that trustworthiness of the data. How complete is it? How accurate is it spatially? How accurate is it from an attribute perspective? And so that's things that we're thinking about on the R&D front. And I think those would be of high value to you guys on the government side, and challenge the community here to start thinking about those things as well.
There's one TED Talk that I did. There's one TED Talk that I really like. It came out probably a good 6-7 years ago, and it was by an author who wrote a book called The Entrepreneurial State. One of the things she articulated was an old philosophy about the role of government. And there's a quote in there that I really like, that what we do on the government side are things that are not a little better or a little worse than anybody else. We do the things that nobody else is doing because maybe they don't have the incentive, they don't have the expertise, they don't have the capacity. I think to your question about what are the roles in the community, or what do we need from the community, or what do you need from the government agencies, although you're all government, so it's sort of speaking to the choir, what are the niches? What is only USGS qualified to do, or best qualified to do, or NGA qualified to do, or best qualified to do, versus OSM, or versus OGC, or versus somebody else? If you have a sustainable model to create data that meets our specifications and needs, there's no reason we need to be duplicating, and we need to be communicating what those barriers are and what those roles are. On the other hand, you're not going to be collecting nationwide LIDAR. That's something, that's why there's a congressional investment, because there's no, nobody's been able to figure out a business model to do it cheap enough to make money, other than have the government fund it through contract. So you might see some other cases. Orthoimagery is a really good example. Back in the 90s and 2000s, that was a government mission. Now you can go buy imagery all day long. Until that switches, that's still a government responsibility. That fits in that category of things nobody else are doing because they don't have the incentive or the means or otherwise the imperative or capacity. So that's at least what I'd like to see, is maybe some communication about expectation, whether it's AI algorithm development, whether it's maybe about the data development. I talked about training data sets, the expertise. Is that coming from academia? Is it coming from private sector? I think that's an area that could be improved upon.
I would ditto to both comments. No, I mean, I think there's the aspect that we need to understand. Like, I would love to understand the hard problem sets from outside coming back to us, because one of the things I strived for when I was doing open source development was ensuring that a lot of the capabilities we were developing made it back to the public, because I think that's important, because it honestly feeds back to better data, better capabilities for the wider good. So I think there needs to be a closer partnership, and we need to build those relationships. And
what were you talking about, Convinity?
I can't remember. Whatever. Oh, see, this is what happens. It's late in the day. It's attribution. I don't remember. But yeah, teaching the machines to help us, I guess. I honestly don't remember. I think the thing I was going to try and get at was, as we see technology continue to proliferate, and you see people like Google's and Microsoft's, they're doing things now that weren't done necessarily very well, let's say 5 years ago, right? It continues to get better. So what's the next? What's the future, right? And let's not be content with what the computers are doing now and in the next year, but start thinking about, sort of to Carter's point, no, it hit me, was the characterization of features, right? It's not enough to just have that building on the ground. I want to know what the materials are of that building. I want to know what's the roof made of? And the more the computers can do that and save us time and energy, the more our analysts and our warfighters, the less they have to focus on that, and they can focus on the actual intel that's on the ground there.
All right, who has a question for this panel?
Yep. We were going to learn from the high school crowd.
And really bring the microphone close to your mouth so we can hear you.
Hello. When you started to define what was authoritative, I was hoping that I would hear the words data integrity, data accuracy, and even data that is impervious to perspective. We all know that we're human beings, and with being human beings, we come with issues that may not be 100% correct. But over the past years, what I think that we have all come to realize, and especially after COVID, is we're one people on the planet, and we need to work together. So my question to the team today, whether you believe this question or the answer is going to be what you consider for government or for private sector, since we have human beings that is creating the data training sets, my question to you is, in order to ensure that this authoritative data is free from perspective, accurate, and has some integrity, are there multiple teams being put together to not only test the data, but to test the integrity of those who have created the training sets?
Those are all excellent points. And while we didn't use those terms that you did, we did talk about QA and QC, and the accuracy and the data that's free from perspective or unbiased, I think is, that's the kind of things we want to see from QA and QC processes, especially on training data. If you've got data that's only trained on white affluent networks, that's going to produce a response from an AI network that you don't want. I think that's going to be baked into the policies and procedures that we have in developing these. And I say that because if you look at the policy that's starting to be developed at the federal level, and there's an office within OSTP, the National AI Advancement Office, they've developed some strategies and R&D strategies for the federal government, and they specifically call out some of those things that you're talking about to make sure there's transparency in the data sets, there's equity in the training data sets, and the people understand that it is being based on broad-based data set that's representative of all of us, and that it is really integral to understanding how AI is used and the answers that it comes up with. So wholeheartedly agree, and I hope we're going into this eyes wide open, and the documents I've seen so far reflects that we are. So I'm optimistic about that.
I would just add, one of the challenges, and I can't speak for everybody up here, but one of the challenges with training data itself and the reason why it's so difficult is because it's not like I'm taking a building one time. I have to take that building 20 or 30 times from 20 or 30 different perspectives, and that gives me a confidence score in that output. And so that's where I think we're learning as we go, but that's where we're building that confidence along the way. So to your point, it's not just one individual's perspective on something. You're getting a whole group of individuals that are agreeing, yeah, that's this building, this is the location, and this is what it does.
Good question.
Yeah, that's greatly. I could just speak to data ROI. And I think at the end, Maggie maybe was right from the start. Maybe it's related to the the value and the investment of the data, but generally, a lot of the challenge we have with data quality is incentivizing data creators to actually characterize uncertainty and et cetera. So if we rewarded, starting with measuring data ROI, can you speak to data ROI and some ideas on how to formalize that that kind of concept and tracking? Show me the line.
So I can take a stab at it. So historically, the way we've produced data or had data produced was along a certain threshold. And it was requirements driven, and it was driven by, hey, I need country X collected because it's over this many years old. What we're trying to drive to is more of a data grooming kind of change detection environment where, hey, there's change actually happening here in the world. This is where we need to fix our data and make it better. And by doing that, allowing our analysts more time to focus on those features and add additional attribution that maybe we didn't have in the past. It's enabling us to look at other sources that are out there to enrich those vector data with information that we hadn't traditionally thought of or collected. And then really driving, we're moving towards some foundation digital twin where, you know, we want to collect data at the city level and let computers do what they do best, which is thinning data out, right? Well, to get to that point is a significant jump from where we've been in the past. And so more to follow, but I mean, what we're trying to implement within our organization are those mechanisms and those processes that will enrich data. But to your point, having a mechanism where, hey, we could incentivize the public to add additional attribution, I think is a great concept. It's how do we do it legally? And I would be happy to help, but legally we're sort of limited in what we can do, so.
So the ROI is a big concern or area of importance for us as a data set producer, because we want to show lots of value to Will so that he sees value in the data sets that we build for him and others in the community. One of the ways that we do that is through DOI citations, but you know, most people in the government that are reusing data aren't going to cite use a DOI citation. But Aaron showed DOI for our outage data. We have DOIs for all of our land scan data sets. So that's one way we've kind of leveraged opportunities from the academic sector to give our data something that's citable and referenceable, so that you can easily go into the academic literature in that case and see how many times has this data set been cited across all of science. Unfortunately, though, we have kind of a black box once it goes over into the government user realm, right? And there's probably a lot of use that just isn't captured, isn't well cited or well referenced in that regard. So that's something that we should collectively try to figure out.
I think that's all the time that we have. Thanks, panelists, for your thoughts and time. And thanks to all of you. I'm going to turn it back over to Eddie.